everyone, and welcome to The Verge, another episode. Today, we have Rachini Mousavi. She is the VP of Enterprise Analytics at UNC Health. Welcome.
Thank you, Rebecca. I'm thrilled to be on here with you today.
So happy to have you on a nice Monday. We'd love to start off with, just getting to know you, know your background and how you got up to the job role that you have today.
Yeah. Well, so today I'm the VP of Enterprise Analytics at UNC Health. I think if I take us back in time, this is definitely not where I thought I would be when I first started my career, just like a lot of folks. I've done a little bit of patient care. So I've been a nurse aide before. I did that while I was in high school, got certified, and I always thought I wanted to be in direct patient care. I've always known I wanted to be in healthcare. So I've stayed true to that part, at least. My degrees are both in health policy and management. So I really thought I would be on the business side for forever. But what I discovered through both my consulting job as well as working at UNC Health for the last 16 plus years is that I really just love data. I love analytics. I love the value it brings to an organization. Taking my meandering path to get here, I really am just loving the job that I'm in currently.
So how big is the organization and how big is the analytics team that you have working alongside you?
So I'm part of UNC Health, which is a state hospital. So we are spread across the state of North Carolina. We have about 16 hospitals today. But, as we grow and do more to serve the residents of North Carolina, that number could change over time. My team is a central analytics team for the health system. So we have about 120 folks that are dedicated to that central data and analytics capabilities, everything from the acquisition of data all the way through to how we visualize it and the data science and forecast side of things. So just a really broad spectrum of what we're trying to do with analytics. But I think one of the other really great things that we do is that we have a community analytics model at UNC Health. So for all of those hospitals and the thousands of clinicians and practices that we have across our state, we have an enablement model that we support either folks who are needing data or analysts that are spread across the system so that they're capable of doing their job effectively in a data-driven format too.
That's awesome. How did you, or maybe it was your predecessor, that put together that structure to enable people to get the data themselves? And how have you found the adoption of that amongst the end users?
Yeah. So I will say that I cannot claim that this was all my doing. I've been in a lot of great conversations with the multitude of leaders that are involved with data and analytics at UNC Health for many years. But I think one of the things that we did right around the 2015 timeframe was we acknowledged that we needed to act more like a system, a health system that's working together and not just in silos. But that acknowledgement allowed us to also recognize that we needed to decide if we were going to have a central analytics model, a decentralized model, or a hub and spoke or community model, as we like to call it. That decision alone, I think, was like the first launching point. Like, it's a step towards doing all the things that come from it. My former boss was really integral in helping to make sure that we have the right resources in place to think about not just that community aspect, but also the how do we differentiate ourselves with data and analytics. And so he brought both data governance as well as data science to UNC Health around 2016. And then you fast forward a few years and we brought our IT side of that to the same table and we joined forces to create one centralized analytics group, which has really helped to revolutionize the way that we are able to serve our customers across our organization.
Yeah, of course. Of course. What is one of the biggest, data mining or projects that UNC Health is proud of? Really like making a difference in people's lives with, some particular information.
Yeah. So many, there's so many to choose from. I think, during COVID we were able to use, more of a community reflection index model to make sure that when we partnered with some of the organizations that are in the communities, ensure that vaccines were getting to a very diverse group of folks across our state. So it was a great partnership, not just using data to highlight it, but also leveraging information to drive action that really impacted lives and made sure that we were getting vaccines out to folks. We've also used data to start up our hospital at home program. So as you likely know from, you know, the news and other things, how hospital at home is a growing trend. It's something that we've got to embrace. We've used a data science model to drive who's a good candidate for that. And so that doesn't necessarily say that this person is the right candidate. It might help us eliminate the folks that are not the right candidates first, mm-hmm. and then allow the folks who do that work to really dive in and focus on the folks that are the best candidates for it. And then they can be treated in the comfort of their own home, which is exactly what we want, folks to be at the right space to be able to get the care they need.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving over towards, you know, AI and ChatGPT, how do you see the large language models providing utility to healthcare, whether it be education or workflow or to help physicians, you know, really focus on the patient in front of them and not on the computer so much? How are you seeing this evolve?
Yeah, Rebecca, I think that is probably the biggest question that is circulating across our healthcare system these days. You know, just a multitude of educational conversations that are happening with our leaders and staff around what large language models are, what they can offer. Really great conversations about how we should be wary of that kind of technology, mm-hmm. and what it can mean, but also a lot of enthusiasm and visionary conversations around what can we do with things like large language models to change the way we deliver healthcare. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna stay out of the education aspects of it and the research aspects of it and just focus on operations, you know, our clinical, but the hospital and clinical side of things. You know, I think there is a lot that happens within our EHR that's being explored. So we're an Epic customer. They recently put out their announcement about leveraging Microsoft's OpenAI services to embed that into Epic. UNC Health is partnering with, is piloting that capability within Epic. We're one of a few hospitals that's going to jump on board to do that, just because we feel strongly like that's a path forward to really, you know, considering things like provider burnout and better clinical care, because you can get some things like summarization of charts or, some drafting of in-basket messages, just really great potential that can come from tech like large language models. Mm-hmm. But there's a multitude of other use cases, right? And I don't want to mm-hmm. focus so much on the clinical that we don't highlight the gains in a health system. It's a full business, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot we can do in the operational space and the administrative space to make our staff more efficient, to reduce cost, to really think about the capabilities that can make us a better organization to serve our patients so that we can put our resources where they need to be to really drive great innovation as well as progress as a health system and be available for all of our patients across the state.
How do you feel that it will help with the quality of care for patients? You know, all HIPAA and all of that aside, if we push that all away and just focus on, you know, being able to use this type of model for quality of care and for patients.
So if we stayed purely on the clinical side, I will say that, you know, with any kind of technology, right, this is not specific to any given EHR or tool that we use, because there's lots of products that we use for patient care. It's almost information overload for the mm-hmm. for the nurses and the respiratory therapists and the physicians and everybody that's part of that care team, right? When you gather that much data, the really big part that we need to be able to look to this technology for is how do we help to summarize it, synthesize it, provide mm-hmm. the most critical information that might be in the form of an alert, in the form of, you know, just things that a provider should be aware of, and put that front and center. So it's a prioritization of information, taking it from data and making it meaningful information that we're looking for with these kind of capabilities. And I think the potential is high, right? Mm-hmm. Do we have to still worry about how this technology hallucinates? 100%. You know, that is why we're doing a lot of vetting. It's why we're doing a lot of pilot groups and, you know, going slowly, but in a way that we're talking about the integration directly into where people are working, because that's how we really make those leaps forward in terms of how we change the care and delivery that we do for our patients that will hopefully then lead to the quality that you're mentioning.
How do you feel that AI and ChatGPT will either assist or inhibit, you know, data analytics teams across the country? Are you worried about getting data out? Or are you excited because you'll have more data at your fingertips?
Oh, wow. What a great question, right? It's, you know, I think what I worry about, if we want to put it that way, is our ability to give our staff enough focus to be able to really drive value out of the capabilities that we're trying to get to. The reason I'm saying it that way is that, you know, things like large language models, while, you know, some of this technology has been around forever in healthcare, we're slow adopters. So it's very new for us, like other industries too. ChatGPT is something that is revolutionizing the way that people are looking at the way that they work and how they get there. But in healthcare, because we are now thinking about this as a transformational type pivot point for us, and many of us are, at least, I don't want to speak for everyone. You know, I think the biggest challenge for people like myself and you know, the folks I work with is, can we enable the data to be available for those folks to take advantage of those tools? Can we think about the interoperability across our different systems and tools to be able to enable those models? Do we have enough information? Is the data that these large language models were trained on, is it sufficient to be able to provide the results we need, right? And so for really diving in and making that available, it's time, it's attention, and it's resources that we need to be able to give towards really vetting it and making sure it can be done in a safe and effective way that adds value.
Yeah. I think you, I saw your post on social about the change is coming, you know, we need to move forward aggressively, but cautiously. And so what are you giving advice to your team and your providers in the organization? It seems like you all are really moving forward aggressively, but I do hear the caution in your voice. And what are some of the topics that come up when you're talking to other leaders?
Yeah, so I like to focus a lot on the enthusiasm when I'm talking with other leaders, because I think the naysayers are definitely there, and they're right in the things that they're worried about. I mean, for us, even with ChatGPT, that balancing act that we do of enthusiasm and excitement against the realities of things that we should be rightfully worried about, like, we've had to work collaboratively with other data leaders across different industries, even, to talk about what are the do's and don'ts of ChatGPT on a web-based format, right? Like, how do we take advantage of that and let it accelerate where we're trying to get to without us putting our data and our patients' data and our information at risk? So that's the wary side of it, right? The enthusiasm side of it is really trying to think in a way of how this evolution of healthcare could take place if we leverage the technology effectively, right? And building that enthusiasm doesn't mean that it sands the things that we need to be wary of. It means it needs to be inclusive of it. We do need to run forward ahead as a health system if we intend to be a leader in this space. And I do feel like that's something that UNC Health is excited about, that we want to remain in, you know, some of the upper echelon groups of health systems that are taking advantage of AI. But it can't be with just blinders on and ignoring some of the things that are that could put us at risk. So it's it's baking that into our path forward, but still enthusiastically driving those possibilities in a way that people are onboarding with us.
Yeah, and excited, right? It's easy for us to be excited. We're the healthcare IT, you know, geeks in the room, but. There's other people that will proceed with more caution. I really, truly hope that it helps move health IT forward, because we still are so far behind. I want to switch over, because I saw one of your posts on social about your puppy Courtyard, at one of your organizations. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It looks really amazing.
Well, one of our hospitals, Rex Hospital, I think they posted on that, and I saw some colleagues that I knew taking advantage of the opportunity to snuggle a puppy. You know, I think this is just one example of many of how our folks at UNC Health are really caring for teammates and thinking about their well-being and providing opportunities to take a break from their everyday stress and rigors of their roles to, you know, fill their hearts and their souls with some goodness, yeah. Like a snuggle from a puppy.
There's nothing better than a puppy lick and that tongue going.
Oh, yes.
So there was a puppy petting area at Vive. And then I didn't make it to the one at Hims, but I heard there was one at Hims. So nice. It was very well received. I think it speaks to a lot of the culture at your organization. And so what is one thing that you're doing as a leader to really embrace that culture of that, you know, the puppy courtyard and, yeah. And help your staff through, you know, or as we come out of, you know, COVID and move forward?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there are so many different ways that we're doing that as an organization. And you know, you can tell I'm a fan of UNC Health. I've been here for coming up on 17 years this January, and I have no intention of really going anywhere else because I love the culture that we've built. And it's one where, you know, it's open doors where leaders are accessible to you. It's one where, you know, the hard conversations happen. And if you have concerns or you need something to change that's personally impactful to you, that you can be part of it. We have employee resource groups to really drive the equity and inclusion aspects of our organization. I sit on two committees that I feel very passionate about. I might be on the data and analytics space, but HR has always been a passion of mine just because I feel like if you're going to be a leader, you've got to really influence how we take care of our people. So I sit on our retention committee as well as our equity and inclusion committee for the health system. And those are two areas that, you know, I try and go all in to make sure that even either on the data and analytics side, I can support them or from the leadership aspects of where I sit that I can support those activities. And then the same is true for my team. I've got a big team with amazing directors and managers that you know I work with, and I think they just do a phenomenal job of listening and being available in this hybrid and remote work kind of opportunity as well. I think there's a lot they're trying to do to make sure they're touching base with people and making sure that they feel heard and have someone to talk to.
Yeah, and, that's great.
Yeah, I think there's one other thing I'll add to that. And I think, yeah. You know, in this kind of climate that we're in, and, you know, I really want to say this because I want to acknowledge that all of our workforce has gone through a lot since COVID. And, you know, we have to really acknowledge that the people who come to work are not just workers, but they're whole people. And we talk about that a lot with our staff that, you know, that as a whole person, if you need something, we are here for you to help you get through whatever that is. And I think that's an important thing as leaders for us to embrace as well, that recognition of the person behind the worker that's doing something for you.
I love that. As one good thing that came out of COVID, I feel like that is, you know, one of the good things that came out. It's embracing that we are whole people and that, you know, not today, but, you know, another day, my 7-year-old will pop in and say hi to you.
That's right.
And I might be taking a call from the car because we're, you know, we have something going on. And so to hear that you all are embracing that as such a large organization is really wonderful. Wonderful to hear. Tell us about this conference that's coming up in the fall, and you are lucky enough to be one of the speakers.
Yeah. So the Health Data and Analytics Association is a consortium of really all the health systems in the country, anybody that wants to be a part of it. I like to call it our coalition of the willing within the analytics space. It's leaders, it's practitioners, it's everyone. And, you know, it's really meant to be that we're trying to enhance and further the mission of data and analytics within healthcare, really try and help it do the everyday work that it needs to do as well as advance it. And I'm going to be attending the one in Denver this November, and hopefully others who are in the healthcare data and analytics space, you can become a member as well for free and come join us.
Oh, that's so exciting. Now, how many people usually attend this conference?
Yeah, so I don't have the final counts. I'd have to check with my colleagues over at Denver Children's. Yeah, I think it's around 400. So it's not massive, but in some ways it's really great to create one of those intimate, more personable sessions where you can get to know folks.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you know what your topic will be speaking, or you're still working that out?
Well, I haven't gotten my abstract approved yet. I've just submitted it, but I'm actually hoping to collaborate with one of our vendors to discuss the potential for AI and generative AI in healthcare. So a lot of what you and I are talking about right now, and discuss how we as leaders should be prioritizing the advancements for those capabilities in healthcare.
Awesome. That's super exciting. So I'd love to ask you my question I always end our podcast with, and it is, what is your superpower?
Yeah. Oh, I love that question. Oh, goodness. I think for me, it's a combination of being a connector of things, of peoples, of opportunity. And a lot of that is driven by empathy. So when I let myself dive in and really understand a situation and a person and an opportunity, I think being able to see it from different perspectives really helps me to with that connection piece and that aspect of how can we make some leaps and bounds together.
You're able to see the person as a whole person, which is exactly what your organization embraces. That's
absolutely
wonderful.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your time today and being on the podcast. And good luck at your speaking engagement, and we will talk soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning into the Verge podcast, brought to you by Divergent, a leading healthcare IT consulting firm. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to hit the follow button to stay up to date with the latest IT developments and the exciting ways tech is transforming healthcare today.